Blog Talk Radio.
Enough of that. Hey, guys, this is Brian. We're with Project Paranormal Radio. We're going to have an interesting show tonight. I have helping me out as a co-host. I have Jeff Porter Sr. from the Unexplained Investigators. Jeff, you want to say hello?
Hey, guys, this is Jeff, Unexplained Investigators in out of North Carolina.
Right, right. How's your week been going, Jeff?
Oh, it's been going pretty good so far. Looks like this weekend's going to be a little bit better when I get out in the field again.
What do you have planned?
This weekend's going to be the Brown Mountain Lights, which kind of takes us into the whole, are we looking at orbs, are we looking at UFOs, are we looking at paranormal, you know, what is exactly we're looking at. So that's gonna open up many different facets when we get up, when we actually get up there and get some stuff documented. Hopefully, our radio show coming up on next Tuesday, we're able to present some of the findings.
That's interesting. While we're on the subject, why don't we talk a little bit about orbs, if you want, and you and I had spoke about it briefly, and let's try to continue that conversation for everyone.
Yeah, just kind of throw out there that, you know, it's that, you know, in the paranormal world, it's a huge topic of conversation. There's the believers, there's the straddlers, there's the absolutely this is dust, dirt, mist, rain, you know, whatever. And for years, you know, I got to admit, you know, I started out probably like a lot of the older folks. I started out, you know, as a kid being caught up in the Amityville stuff, and, you know, you had
classic.
Two groups there, the Warrens. Yeah, exactly. You had the Cablins and the Warrens, which some of the predominant folks involved in that, obviously the family, the Lutzes. And, you know, through that period of and kind of, you know, studying that and learning from that and reading everything I could and then kind of expanding into the general paranormal stuff. You know, again, looking from a demonic perspective that was claimed to have been over to the more energy spirit kind of world, you know, transition. But, you know, for years, you know, I went with orbs do not exist. That is, you know, that was one of my mottos that just,
right.
I don't believe in them. And what I found, and it happened to me in 2010, and I'd been researching, looking into paranormal stuff, you know, and demonology for, you know, probably since at least 85. Most of that from 85, so I'd say 90 was from a biblical standpoint, theology, and then it kind of transitioned into where it is today, but you know, I just did not believe in the orbs. And as the digital age came along, I was with, you know, most of the folks out there, the non-believers in orbs, that say, look,
right,
if these things have been here for so long, why weren't we getting them on film? But again, some, you know, I went back and I look at my film, you know, my photographs from back then. You know, film is so fragile. I mean, heat. Any temperature change, I don't want to get it. Any temperature change, moisture, any of that can affect it if you're not. And it's very difficult in what we do to when you're changing a roll of film out to keep it as secure as possible. So anyway, you had your problems with exposure back then, and now in the digital world, you have your problems with the sensitivity of the components and possibly picking up rain. And you know, I kind of like it, like I do a lot of things. Yeah, there's pictures of dust out there, and yeah, there's pictures of rain, and there's pictures of snow. I see them every single day. I've got, you know, my group kind of splintered not too long ago, and the ones that decide. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's funny you mentioned the different types of film and development between in the past and now recently, because I recently talked to a paranormal investigator, and they asked, they're like, well, do you guys only use digital when you take photos? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, don't you? I'm like, no, we still use the old 35 millimeter or older mm-hmm. camera also along with mm-hmm. the digital because there's a lack of pixelization on the old old style film. Yes, it's a pain in the butt because it takes a little while to get it developed and, you know, to work on all that, but it's still a secondary medium to validate what you get on one camera, you know, your digital. If you have both cameras taking pictures kind of simultaneously, you can validate, okay, well, maybe that's just a digital camera, you know, or it balances out a little bit more and it helps to narrow it down a little bit better, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I agree. There's a lot of groups, and that is one of my goals in 2014 with this team is to go to have that 35 millimeter availability on every investigation. One of my issues is I've been trying to figure out how to work that because my team is trained to take three photographs without moving. You know, to get stationary, will it be tripod or your, you know, it's handheld, but stationary, you take three consecutive photographs before you move forward. So if we're doing that, we do that to kind of identify, obviously a bug's going to trail through the three frames. The lint will trail through the three frames, and you'll see the little the telltale sign tail behind it. But the being able to adapt the 35 millimeter to that is going to be difficult in that I would really like to have the same pictures at the same time, and it's just not going to happen because of flashover. So
that's right. That's right.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the answer is going to be. I just got to spend a little time, quality time doing it. But yeah, a lot of the groups out there today are just the newer folks, you know, and this is where we kind of run into a problem with the orbs. I believe in orbs today, and I'll show that story a little bit later, but I also believe there's a lot of murk out there because these newer guys coming along aren't aware what to really look for, and they're not aware, even with training, they're not necessarily aware of how to document and how to analyze what they're documenting to understand why they may be getting those false orbs. And
right.
So you get the field so smacked with mess out there that's where this argument over orbs comes. If we got all these guys out there that are just bogus to stop trying to find spirits where there's not, I think the orb debate would go way down, if not completely away at some point. But you know, as long as you got people claiming dust and raindrops as orbs, and you know, we're going to continue to have this battle.
Well, I mean, I've also seen some images that I believe are truly orbs. They're few and far between, but again, you also have contamination from other sources.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take a minute if I can.
I'm sorry.
I want to take a minute if I can to apologize to you, Jeff, and everyone else. I kind of just got home about 10 minutes ago, so I was rushing, so I wasn't really as prepared as I'd like to be. The guest that we were supposed to have this week was psychic medium Mary Barrett, and Mary contacted me today due to the bad weather that's, you know, coming everywhere. Excuse me. She has faulty service, and the last thing that she wanted and I wanted was to get on the air with you guys, and you guys get so interested and into it that and then it gets cut off, you know. So we went ahead and rescheduled for next week. So now Jeff and I are kind of just, you know, we're real good friends and we, you know, colleagues, and I got into Jeff earlier today and we decided we're just going to come on and get on the air and do an open call night. Basically, you guys call in. We want to hear your stories. Yeah, we're talking about orbs right now, but you know, that's just for now. You know, we want to talk about anything and everything, and we want you guys to call in, share your stories with us, and let's see, because what it boils down to is we want to understand what you guys are experiencing so that we can combine it all together and try to make more sense of it. And I'm sure, Jeff, it's the same thing with you. That's the same goal that you want through your own broadcast program.
Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, one of the featured ideas that I have is, you know, is the get the conversation. And a lot of people, if you kind of look out there, there's a lot of debate every week. Somebody posting something about a picture of an apparition or a picture of an orb or whatever it is, and they're throwing out there for conversation. And you know, that's really where we've got to continue to stay at, is focused on that conversation piece, because that's how you get to resolution. You know, if everybody just kind of goes in their corner and says, this is what I am, this is what I believe, I don't care what they say, and then we never get anywhere.
Right. So you guys call in the number. If you're listening, the number should be right above the webpage that you're listening on. If you can't access that, the number is 323-580-5703. Jeff, I want to talk to you a little bit about what you got going on up there, and I want to continue this with the orb. Now, you mentioned that you're about to go to the Brown Mountain Lights, right?
Yes.
Okay. If you can describe to, because I know, you know, everyone from on your own broadcast, they're aware of it, but those on my broadcast might not be aware of it. Go ahead and describe exactly what's taking place there and what it is that is drawing you guys out there to investigate.
Yeah, great. And again, that, you know, that's kind of why I was going to the orb conversation at the beginning, because this is ultimately where some of the debate comes in with these lights, is basically what the Brown Mountain Lights are. It's in western North Carolina, an area. There's two or three different lookout spots. One off of a road, it's called NC Highway 181, going into Jonas Ridge, North Carolina, out of Morgan, North Carolina. And there's lights that can be seen, unexplained lights that can be seen at points throughout the year. Then on what we call the Old County Line Road or Old Highway 105, which is the original wagon trail from the high country to the foothills. And there's a overlook there called Wiseman's View. It's the most prominent, most popular one for looking at the lights and seeing the lights. And then we have a research facility called the Linville Mountain Research Center, which is on the lower side of the mountain, on the back side of the mountain, a little bit lower down. Where we actually study the lights up close and personal, because we do have them come there to the property. But there's a ton of different folklore behind it. Major folklore being that there was some kind of battle a couple hundred years ago with some Native Americans. They clashed. They had a war there and a couple battles there in what's called the Linville Gorge. And after the battle, the wives and families took flaming torches and went down into the gorge searching for the bodies. And that's kind of the common paranormal thought behind this, is that is these families and widowed wives going down into the gorge with their torches looking for their loved ones that were never recovered. Again, it's a wilderness area and very easy to be lost and never found, or be found years and years later, your skeletal remains. So even back then, it would have been if you were in a battle or some kind of conflict, it would have been tough for anybody to come back and find you at a later date. So that's the biggest, you know, when you talk to folks around, that's the biggest folklore that kind of lingers out there, that it's Native American. The kind of the secondary
it's interesting.
Go ahead.
I agree, because it seems nowadays anything that's mythical or that people don't understand, they want to chalk it up to Native American. So, you know, I think that's a little bit overly used, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that, again, it's the folklore that came down. I guess the more common belief is that it's a natural, that area was considered, and I'm not going to say this correctly, and I'm not, by any means, I'm not trying to be politically correct. I'm going to kind of describe it the best that I can. The local tribes, the Cherokees, used this area as a spiritual place. There wasn't any burial grounds or anything like that involved, but because of the waterfalls, the water, the natural energies there, it was one of their ceremony location. And the more traditional belief now, going back from folklore, leaving the folklore behind, coming to more, I guess, better thought process maybe, is that the energies that's being seen, the Brown Mountain Lights that are being seen, is what the Native Americans were interacting with through whatever ceremonies or rituals they were doing in that area.
That's interesting. I mean, you guys are basically trying to figure out what exactly it is, correct?
That is correct, because now we go to the other side of the scale a little bit, which is the UFO. There's a lot of folks out there who believe that what we're seeing or what people are observing is UFOs in some capacity. So, you know, one of the pieces of equipment that we're deploying in this effort, obviously, is a thermal imager. So
right.
Hopefully when we observe these things with our naked eyes, then we're able to put this component on there and try to measure a heat signature.
Right. Well, you know, I have to be honest with you. I'm skeptical about it being a UFO, because I believe if that was the case, I think the government would be a little bit more involved with it.
Well, and again, now I'm going to kind of go into conspiracy theories, because, again, we're going to kind of get to the other side of the spectrum. Now the facts are, these are facts, that from, I'm going to say World War II, through the military claims that they no longer train soldiers, special forces, in the Limbo Gorge. But predominantly during Vietnam, that's when most of the, and I was born in Jonas Ridge, which is right there at the Limbo Gorge, my backyard. And then I grew up in an adjacent county, but, again, Linville Gorge in my backyard.
Right.
But through the Vietnam War, my family lived in that area. And the Special Forces, Green Berets, the Delta, all those guys would be dropped off in the Linville Gorge, and they had to survive, navigate their way out, and undetected.
Right.
And so the mountain folks tell those stories. And I know as of in 1984, I was in the area doing some stuff through, back then I was younger and I was in the Civil Air Patrol, and we were just kind of out doing a hike or whatever. They just took the kid, it took us out to give us something to do. And, of course, we all had rappelling gear and, you know, different things. And I came across four guys at the bottom of a cliff, and they couldn't get up. And the one guy, you know, noticed I was wearing a uniform of some sort. And he said, you got rope? And I said, yes. So I threw a rope down, and these four guys climbed up. Come to find out, they were some kind of, in 84, they said were Special Forces Marines. That didn't really register with me what they are. So what they, you know, what their true position is in the Marine Corps back then, I couldn't tell you. But as of 1984, you know, I helped those four guys come up out of the gorge. So, I'm confident they were still training, at least in the 80s, but today they claim they're not training there. But there is a huge belief in the area that there's a top secret military installation somewhere in that Limbo Gorge.
That's interesting. Now, for those that don't know, I mean, I know you and I are friends, but for those of you that don't know, Jeff, you're former law enforcement, correct?
Yes.
Can you give a little bio on yourself for those? Because I know that everyone that listens to my program might not listen to the Unexplained Investigators program, and you guys should because it's an awesome show. I'm on there quite often. This is the first time Jeff has actually been on my show, but I hope to change that. Hint, hint. But with Jeff and I, we just put things out there. We don't try to judge anyone. We just put the information out there, and you guys can decipher for yourselves whether you want to believe what's going on or whether you don't. You know, we're not trying to convince you. We're just trying to present you with the information. But Jeff, if you would, please go ahead and give a little bio on yourself, because you mentioned just a few seconds ago about some of the militaristic type things, and to give people a little background as to why you would be out there and why you would know all these things.
Right. Well, basically, I was born and raised in the mountains of North Carolina. I grew up with the Limbo Gorge. One of the biggest attractions in this area, North Carolina, is the Limbo Gorge. Basically, grew up in my backyard hunting in there. And, I grew up, and I always put this in because there is some significance involved. I grew up in the Baptist church. My father is a Southern Baptist minister, so I grew up in that missionary style, going from, building churches and communities throughout the mountains. And that led me into, I was in school. I was active in Civil Air Patrol. I was active in the ROTC programs, Junior Officers Training Corps. And then eventually ended up at 16 going to work starting with my EMT, Emergency Medical Technician, and going to work eventually in the emergency services. Through about 93, I think, is when I switched to law enforcement, and through law enforcement into the private sector, where I continued to do criminal investigations on the corporate side, and to this day.
Right, right. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And I'm tell you what, man, I'm really grateful to have you as a friend and have you, on board. You guys over there at the Unexplained Investigators have really taken me in, and I really appreciate that.
Oh yeah, you're a great resource, and our show's slightly different in that some of the guests that I have, but generally speaking, it's exactly what you said. Yeah, what I do is I invite about anybody on, and I let them put their view out there, their point of view, so the listeners can take from that what they may. And, sometimes it gets a little choppy, but at the end of the day, each one of us need to have that platform where we can say, we can say what we're experiencing for others to pick up on and see how they feel about it.
That's right. That's exactly right. We have a caller on hold right now. I'm going to try to bring them. Well, I'm sorry. I guess they hung up. Well,
okay.
If you would call back, I apologize for that. So you guys are similar to me in the aspect that you are completely open-minded to all things paranormal, right?
Oh, yeah. With my unique background, and Mike, one of our senior investigators, and I've got him on here sending me a message. He's listening to the show. That may have been him trying to call in. But basically, our background with law enforcement and his background with the 82nd Airborne and things like that, we just kind of come together good on this stuff. And our experiences through life has led us to a clear understanding that, you hear people say it all the time. you learn something new every day, or you find out something you didn't know, or they discover something new, or things that we didn't know about from before. And so you've got to have that open mind. And we, our group approaches everything that way. Approaches, anything that unexplained that comes towards us as, that's a true possibility there. We cannot say that this person is being fictitious. Who am I to doubt their experience?
Right. I love that about you guys, because, me, my personal opinion is, if it's something that we don't understand or hasn't been proven, then to me it's paranormal. And if you actually look up the definition of the word paranormal, you have everything from ghosts to aliens to cryptids,
mm-hmm.
And I think it's a narrow path, narrow-minded, in my opinion, to only investigate, and people can do it. Hey, if that's what you want to do, go ahead. But if you're going to call yourself a paranormal investigator, you should investigate all things paranormal and all aspects of it.
I agree.
People,
yeah.
I'm sorry?
I was just saying I agree with that.
And it's fine. I mean, you guys that are only doing the spiritual or ghostly side of paranormal investigation, I'm not knocking you at all. If that's what you want to do, go for it. That's fine. Myself, if I were to go out tomorrow and create my own paranormal investigation team, I wouldn't just keep it narrow down to ghosts. I would open it up to all things paranormal. Because you get more clientele, in my opinion, and it really gets you out there in a broader field and that broader recognition. And to me, it just makes good, even business sense.
Oh, well, it does. And you got, like my team, I've got guys that not any one of us is a jack of all trades. I try to have individuals that specialize in that. The paranormal and the Bigfoot or and the UFO, and sometimes it's a novice thing where they're learning it, but we try to have those avenues. But then anytime we do an investigation, we do them all together, so we all bring that unique perspective to that style of investigation. Because at the end of the day, our investigation style is identical. Whether we're investigating a Sasquatch, a paranormal activity, or a UFO, we still document the same things. We still document our findings. We have a documenter, we have a safety officer, we have a team lead, videographer, photographer, audio guy. We still have all those encompassed, but you're able to bring all that unique experience and point of view to each and every investigation.
Right. And, a lot of people don't understand how different groups, for example, the Unexplained Investigators, which I'm a huge fan of the show. You and I are friends. Everybody on that team absolutely think highly of. And the fact that we all can actually work together, some people might find it hard to understand, but I look at it, and I know I've talked to you, Jeff, and you said the same thing. I look at it like we are all trying to reach the same goal. There's no reason for all this competition and pettiness and childishness. And you mentioned something about your group splintering a while back. That seems to be habitual nowadays. There's a lot of groups splintering. This one doesn't like this person, or this one does that. The main problem, in my opinion, is keep the personal crap out of the professional side of it. When you walk in that door to go investigate, that's what you're doing. Think of it as a job. That's your job. All this other, Billy Ray said this about Bobby Sue. Who cares? Because all that will do will drive a wedge between the team and break it apart.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest defeaters to teams today is the desire to be famous or desire to get on television. And, you know, and I think we kind of, I don't know if everybody kind of keeps up with Christina George and things like that, but I saw today where maybe she's picked up some kind of opportunity to interact with a show. And, that you know, it's great. You know, it's always good when we get a good representation out there into the public world because, you know, I was doing this back before it was popular. And I can, you know, I can tell you that in 1997, it was a lot more difficult to be in this field than it is, you know, and then it was in 2007. Because
right.
These shows on television, as much as people hate them right now, they are opening up they're opening up the world to where people are willing to conversate about it now. In my part of the country, it's still very difficult to talk to folks about this stuff. But for the most part, it is kind of it's starting to open up, and so you got to have those roles. But what I was getting to with that is what I see with what I've seen within not just my team, but teams throughout. You know, if you kind of just read the social media out there, you see it that
yeah.
you know you didn't take pictures of me, or my pictures didn't get posted, or I said this was an orb and you didn't post it. You know, well. You're right. You're exactly right. You need to leave that personal stuff at the house because at the end of the day, when we're putting the stuff out there, we're putting out there what is relevant. What, you know, this is what we've accomplished in our findings. You know, I'm not going to sit there and leave out findings just so I can have Jim Bob in that picture because Jim Bob wasn't in the last four pictures.
Right. You know, to me, that is so petty. That's just so petty to me that this actually happens like that. I can't understand it. You know, I know that you know everybody wants the attention. Everybody wants the attention, and everybody wants that celebrity status and the ego. And it's really really sad. I'm sorry, my daughter is. In here trying to get my attention.
That's okay.
She is so spoiled every time.
And, I'll let you handle that, and I'll jump back to the Brown Mount Lights.
Go ahead.
With the Brown Mount Lights, you know, we were talking about just kind of explaining to your viewers here or your listeners here, you know, we kind of went from the original folklore to kind of what people are looking at today to possibilities of the UFOs along with the possibility of there being a secret military installation somewhere within the Linville Gorge. The other side of that is, are these lights swamp gas or could they be orbs? So, you know, some of the things that we're deploying the thermal imager, and we're going to deploy the dangerous gas detector. So, you know, that's a couple of things that we're doing to attempt to recognize or to identify potentially what is out there. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to have to get a sampling of or get near enough to one of these lights to be able to make some kind of clear conclusion what it is, because you have to be able to measure in some capacity. And, you know, kind of looking at what we're going to be doing this Saturday is we're going to be trying to get in a key location. So hopefully when these lights appear, we're going to be measuring the wind, of course, miles per hour, going to be a direction, directional, all that stuff. And hopefully going to be able to use our dangerous gas detector in this process where if the light appears, we can detect, you know, methane or, you know, any explosive gas out there that could potentially be causing these balls of energy or these balls of light. I tend to think they're energy myself, but, you know, that's yet to be proven. The swamp gas,
I agree.
Go ahead.
It's definitely energy, but I think the main question for me is energy from what? You know.
Well, there's been discussion Of course, the most common mineral in the planet Earth is quartz. And quartz will is conductive with energy and will hold energy. One of the theories, I guess, that's out there is that lightning strikes may be leaving energy in the ground, and then at some point, when everything kind of comes together, the perfect storm, this energy is released. And then you get these spheres of energy going into the atmosphere. And I guess I'm not a meteorologist. I'm not any kind of scientist. So this is all layman's guesstimation. But that it follows some kind of path, as sporadic as that may be, because we're talking about winds and all the stuff that's in the atmosphere, and then they make their way back into the sky.
That's interesting. Whether we can prove that or not, that's a whole other subject.
That's why we do what we do. Yeah, at some point you're going to have to be able. It's just like an apparition, and I'll transition this kind of to maybe some of that side of it. But it's just like anything else that we're doing in this realm of the unexplained phenomena or paranormal, you know, however you want to put it. But everything that we're doing boils down to the exact same point. At some point, we have to be able to measure this experience in some capacity. Until you're able to measure in a true scientific, if you want to use that word, I don't like using it, but you got to have some way to be able to measure what's occurring. That way, if you're able to measure it, then you're able to say, I measured this. And now you start to assign, you've been able to start to somewhat classify what's happening.
Right. I totally understand that. And, you know, it begs the question, is technology, and me personally, I don't think technology has reached that level just yet to give us exactly what it is we're looking for.
Yeah, and if you look at the tools that we're using today as common practice in the field, and Mike, he could tell you, When he came about with the team, I had some tech guys out there, and I have tech guys. You know, these guys are all about the equipment, and I was, you know, I'm a pen and paper kind of guy, and I'm like, I don't want to say I don't believe in equipment, but where's it got us? It's kind of my thought process. But at the end of the day, we have the equipment. These guys use the equipment, and I do see a use for it. But everything that we have is not designed for anything that we do. It's designed for some other project, period. We've adapted it to what we're using it for. So that goes back to, you're correct on having the ability to have the technology to do what we need to do.
If I'm not mistaken, and somebody correct me if I am, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of the only devices that was actually created for paranormal is perhaps the Mel meter. Now, is that true, or do you know if that's 100% certain?
I think the concept of the MEL is for paranormal research, but I think that the individual concept of it is for something else. Again, I'm guesstimating there. I don't hold me to that.
Right. If anyone knows, call in. You know, please, the number is 323-580-5703. You know, we'd love to hear from you guys. I mean, you guys are the reason we're doing this. And we'd love to get some feedback from you guys. We also have our chat room open if you want to jump in there and drop us a line. Yeah, definitely. Let's talk a little bit now, if you want to, Jeff. I know that you, and this is mostly for the listeners who aren't aware of the Unexplained Investigators, your broadcast. I myself, I know that you are an avid, I don't even know how to put it, Sasquatch enthusiast, like myself.
Yeah. I'm a
so
novice.
Well, there are no experts, so you should feel good about that. Let's talk a little bit about that, if you would, because you guys have recently done some investigating there in your area, and you know, you've asked me several times to well, we've talked several times about it, the possibilities of us getting together up, you know, me going up there and getting out there with you guys.
Oh yeah, and you know, it's kind of, you know, and I'll throw the Brown Mountain Lights in there same time I throw in the Sasquatch stuff. Brown Mountain Lights, I grew up with. I saw them my whole life. I never really wanted to study them because there's so many. I thought to be so many scientists out there studying it that I just felt that would be a pointless endeavor for me because these guys at some point will figure it out. Sasquatch is kind of the same. Was kind of the same way for me. There's guys like you, Brian, you know, out there doing these things, and I just thought I'm not gonna. As it, you know, I am interested in that, and I do believe it exists, and I do want to be part of discovering it. But you know, there's lots of folks out there doing it. Am I just going to murky stuff up? So what I did, we were doing a paranormal investigation, and during that paranormal investigation, we started having
Hello?
Bigfoot activity. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was actually trying
okay.
I was trying to figure out how to screen the call, and you're gonna have to fill me
okay,
in on that one day when we're not on the. But we do have I apologize. I'm still trying to get the tech side of all this. I'll have to get with you one day when we're not on air, and you'll have to fill me in on how to do all that. But we do have a caller online, and I totally apologize for interrupting you. You know what you're saying, Jeff. I'm like a new to running the show, I guess. But I will go ahead, if you want, and we'll go ahead and take this caller.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. It's Howie from Thatch on Monday nights.
Oh, hey. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Just calling to listen to the show.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate you calling in. Do you have any interesting stories you can share with us?
No, I actually just tuned in, just clogged in, so I'm catching the wrath of what you were just talking about, the Bigfoots or Squash, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a good one, so just listening in tonight.
Oh, okay, well, hey, I appreciate the support, and now go ahead and you do a broadcast too, right?
Yeah, I'm the program director for FATS, Freaking Awesome Paranormal Show at 9 o'clock on the same network.
Yeah, I caught you guys the other night, and I was listening. It was a pretty good show.
Amber and Ryan. Yeah.
Yeah, welcome to the family. I'm kind of new to the family myself. Jeff, I think you're the old timer here, right?
I'm relatively new to the old radio thing.
Oh, okay. All right, I thought you were here a good while before me, so we're all newbies trying to figure everything out. Well, what do you guys have going? If I can, one at a time, Jeff, and then you explain what you guys have coming up in the next on your next broadcast. Go ahead.
Oh, is that us? Okay. Actually, Monday nights are free for all. We do guests biweekly. So Ryan and Amber are just going to be tearing the doors down, doing their thing and their personality, and who calls in. It's going to be more like a roundtable thing. And then I can't really talk about the guests for the week after just yet because I need approval first.
But I think it's
going to be a show. Yeah, it's going to be really cool. You know, that's why I want to touch base with everybody. Every week, because I personally work 4 to 12, so I'm able to listen in to everybody's shows, and I just like to hear everybody, so kind of showing my support for everybody. But
that's
Ryan
awesome.
And, you know.
Yeah, and what was your name again?
My name's Howie.
Allie?
Howie, just like Howie Mandel.
Oh, Howie. I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay.
It's all good.
Howie, it's nice to meet you. Now, are you all a Sasquatch enthusiast as well?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we cover everything outside of FAPS. Both Amber and Ryan are on my team. I actually run All Seen Paranormal Society. And we've partnered up with Steve Dill from Transcend Authority. He's the co-host over there. And we're actually partnered up with CPR Dennis here in town.
Oh, okay. And where are you located?
We're in Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia. I actually lived in Newport News for about 2 years.
Ah, yes. I have family down at the beach.
I know exactly where you're talking about. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
Sorry, I'm going to jump in. He said Richmond. I lived over in Midlothian for a little while.
I know exactly where that is, too.
Yeah.
I actually still have some friends from that area.
Yeah, we also call it Southside.
So do you guys do the? Have you guys done the Confederate White House?
It's kind of hard because right now battling with Historical Society, you have to really know somebody. You know, you got to know somebody to get into those places. So we've got a couple places. We actually have been invited over the summertime to come up during a day investigation. Jackson? Yeah, Jackson's Memorial, to do an investigation there.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. We were actually invited by the state park official there, the park ranger. He was really cool. He, myself and my director of investigations went up there just to sightseeing. We kind of probed him, and then he probed us, and he goes, "Why don't y'all come up here sometime and do a day shift? God, that should be able to get in night." I'm like, "Hey, sounds good. You know, we'll be glad to." There's a lot of air up there, but other than that, right now we're in one historical location that we're going to Saturday night, but that's by a prop owner. So it's really hard to get into these historical sites.
Well, let me ask you guys. Okay,
sorry, Ed.
If you guys. I'm sorry?
I was going to throw something out there right quick, Brian.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What I was going to say is it's ironic that you're telling me about that historical site during daytime. Back in 2000, when I was living there, I went by the Confederate White House, and I just kind of started chatting the folks up, and they're like, "Well, we're not, you know, you're not allowed to do those kinds of things here." But you know what? If you come through in the daytime and you don't bother anybody and you kind of do your own thing, and I don't know if you've ever been to the Confederate White House, but it's pretty much dead most of the time. And so I did that. That's exactly what we ended up doing.
Now, is this, when you say Confederate White House, is this in Colonial Williamsburg?
Jeff? No, it's downtown Richmond.
Okay.
Downtown Richmond.
All right. Because I have...
And that's correct, right?
Howie. I think we're experiencing some difficulty. Howie, are you there? I think we might... I know it's really storming bad, pretty bad here. Howie, are you there? Okay, I think we lost them. But Jeff, I was going to say, are you there? Are you there still, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what I was going to say is I have a ex-girlfriend who is still a really good friend who actually works for Colonial Williamsburg, and she brings people around, I guess, and tells them a little bit of the history of the area. So if you guys ever want to go investigate there, and I know that there's paranormal because I remember her telling me about it. This was many, many years ago. So if you guys ever were interested in checking out that area, just let me know, and I'm sure I can help arrange something.
Cool.
All right, we have a, I think this is how we call them back in. Let me try to answer them again. Hey, how
hey guys, yeah, it's me. Lost the call.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you heard what I'd said about Colonial Williamsburg, but that goes for you too. If you guys ever want to go there and investigate, let me know, and I might be able to get in touch with, you know, with my friend and try to help you guys out.
Yeah, I missed that part.
Yeah, she works in, as long as I've known her, she's worked at Colonial Williamsburg. You might have to turn your computer down. There's a major feedback. Okay. But she actually works at Colonial Williamsburg. She's a guide, from what I remember, and you know she gives the tours and all that stuff. But I know that there's some paranormal activity going on there because I remember her taking me and pointing me to these places and telling me about it. So if you guys are interested in getting in that area, get with me, and you can find me, you know, Project Paranormal Radio on Facebook, or you can find me, Brian Sons, on Facebook. Add me, get with me, let me know. I'll do what I can to help you guys out.
Cool. Yeah, man, that sounds like a great idea.
And Howie, this is Jeff Porter. I'm with the Unexplained Investigators. Get a chance to look me up on Facebook. You look up the Unexplained Investigators. I fly on Facebook under TUI Founder. I would like to link up with you guys and just hear what you're doing in Richmond. That was such a hot spot. I was only there for about a year before I had to move again, but I just can imagine what you guys get up there.
Yeah, you know, definitely. You know, hooked up with you. It's actually really, really active around here. As of last year, Richmond was placed in the top 10, actually the top 5, the most paranormal cities in the world. And one of the locations that we actually go to, the Exchange Museum, is been put into the top 5 most haunted locations. So it's kind of cool. It's, you know.
That's interesting. I wish I'd known that. I'll tell you what. I wish I'd known that when I lived there. But here's something that me and the girlfriend did when I was in Newport News. We actually would go out to Yorktown to the battlegrounds and sit out there. And there's a couple of old houses and whatnot, a cannon and a few other things. We'd actually go out there, take pictures, and sit out there just to see if we, you know, could hear something. There's a graveyard as well. We didn't have any of the equipment, you know, the fancy equipment or anything like that. We were just going, you know, something fun to do, kind of different. And I really enjoyed doing that. But I wish I'd have known all. I wish I'd have been as into it then as I am now.
Right. I can understand that. I've gotten out myself off to a slow start. I've gone through a couple groups and I told this group we're going to take our time, slow it, take it piece by piece. You know, we've been together now for almost 2 years, and I got a really great group with us. But, you know, that's the thing. This is what we do as a hobby, you know, and you got to have fun with it, you know.
That's right, that's right.
We talked about, you know, going out to battlefields. Lord knows we got enough around us right now, you know, doing daytime investigations and I said, you know, sometimes the simplest stuff that you can get is the best stuff. It's like where we're going again Saturday night. The client has asked us to, you know, not give the location out, but it is a historical location for Richmond and a prominent Richmond family. And this location has been around since the early 1700s. So we've gotten EVPs from Native American, we have EVPs of period time. We've gotten, I've had a full body operation outside the window. That was really cool. That's actually my first body, too. And I so wish I could actually talk about it, but once the evidence is released and the client goes, you know, can give us the description, then I could talk about it more. But it's just exciting. I mean, just to be able to go here. And this is a place that, with the exception of that full-body apparition, we've gotten nothing. But when we get back home, we got piles and piles of Class A EVPs. And you're just like, how is that possible? You're not feeling anything, you're not seeing anything. The location is so calm. When you get home, it's amazing of the evidence we get. So it's like that everywhere around Richmond.
Well, with it being the capital of the Confederacy, and I mean, you can just imagine, you know, what the Union did when they came in there.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Yeah. It wasn't just Union. I mean, we got records and records of the Confederates being just as nasty as the Union troops. In fact, I think at times they were nastier. You know, they talk about Sherman burning the cities, but they don't tell you what the Confederate troops and officers did on their marches. So it's kind of going back and forth. There's negative energy all over the place, and that's the sad part. I mean, look at the prison factor down in Belle Isle. Whew. You know, the torture factor,
yeah,
and interrogation factor, what they had there. Oh, it was horrible.
That is wild. I mean, I can only imagine everything that took place. You know, because your history books, they don't talk about all that. You know, they're going to leave out the gory details and to try to fit their, you know, what they want everyone to believe.
Yeah, it's the same thing as the Union back in the back when the Civil War was going on. Majority of the newspapers and all your historical come from Union papers, not Confederate papers. So they talk negative about, you know, the Confederacy all the time, and you're going to find all the negative stuff, but you're not going to find the good stuff and the stuff that you got to dig into.
Oh, yeah, right. Naturally, I mean, you know.
Well, and Howie, I have a question. This was, back when I was there, this was considered a new haunt. And I was never able to get there, but has there anybody ever talked to you about the FBI shootout there at the farmer's market?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Supposedly that area was highly haunted. Of course, it was a recent haunt, but that one, again, was back in 2000. But
yeah, but there's a couple of societies that have been down there. I've done personal investigations down there. It's down what they call in Chaco Bottom with a slip. That shootout, actually, if I remember correctly, was two blocks in all directions of the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. For anybody that, you know, doesn't know what I'm talking about, the farmer's market is like the club scene and the social scene in the middle of Richmond. And, you know, once they're blue moon, they'll actually be farmers, you know, could bring in their stuff in, but it's more of a socialization scene. And there's a lot of nightclubs down there now. Cabanos is down there, a whole lot of other clubs that have been down for a long time, and other places have been turned into clubs, and they're claiming, you know, activity down there. So it's getting more and more, and it's not, you know, I talked about Belle Isle and all that, and I didn't even bring that up, so that was a good point. Yeah, I have not taken the team down there, but I have done it personally. It's just more of an ambient feel for me. I've got one or two questionable EVPs, but again, we're talking 2005, so, you know, and I think Transcend's been down there, maybe Tri-City, so, but no, we haven't personally been down that far yet.
Okay, yeah, like I said, I did some stuff down there, but not a true investigation. But I had heard, you know, there's so much activity, then I ended up moving to Memphis, Tennessee, and kind of never got to get back to doing that.
We'll be heading down your way in June or July.
Where are you heading to?
We're heading down to Nashville. I've got a girlfriend down there, and She's going to take us out to the Bellwitch location.
Okay. Well, I actually live in Hickory, North Carolina now. I've moved again.
Oh, okay. Hickory's still beautiful. I love Hickory.
Oh, yeah. Hey, well, anytime you guys want to come down and get into something, we got plenty of places down here. Or, hey, if you ever want us to come up there, we'll come hang out with you.
Will do. All right, look, I'm going to put you on hold. I got a call coming through.
Well, I mean, that goes the same for both you guys. I don't know if Howie can still hear or not, but that goes the same for both you guys if you ever get down this way, you know, Mississippi area. I heard Howie say something about he was going to be in Nashville. But, yeah, if you guys ever get down this – and, Jeff, you know, I mean, if you ever get down this way, let me know.
Oh, you know it's a planned trip. We just got to – we got some logistics Mike and I've got to work out. But, yeah, we're – you know, if we could have made it down, what was it, 2 weekends ago or the whatever it was, you guys were all there and together.
In New Orleans.
We were trying our dangest to figure out how to make that happen. And the stars just weren't aligned in that particular weekend.
That would have been awesome. That would have been great. You guys would have loved it.
Yeah, then after I see all the pictures and all the comments, I'm like, man, I should have made it happen.
Hey, I tell you what, there's one in September in Nashville.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's in Nashville. It's in September. Same Wizard World Comic Con. I mean, try to make it.
Well, you know, I'm hearing from Mike that he's going to be freed up after August, and traveling will be a little bit easier for us. So, I got a feeling that'll probably be around our benchmark, you know, to get us a little bit further out. I really want to do. I don't know, Brian, if you've ever been to the Queen Mary, but I really want to get Mike to the Queen Mary because I want to get him out there and videotape him as it just hits him all at one time.
I've never been, but yeah, I would love to as well. Definitely. I mean, I'm all for anything, you know.
And well, you know, I'm gonna jump back to the Wiseman's View side, or Brown Mountain's light side of it, and take us further to the paranormal spirit world. But you know, what I was kind of talking about is we were doing one investigation. Well, I'm sorry, go back into Sasquatch. I was doing one investigation, and we started having the Bigfoot activity, and you know, I just kind of. We got into it. We had some novice in the group that could make Bigfoot calls or said that they could. And I mean, they sounded pretty legit when they did it. And I know I've told you the story before, Brian, and we just kind of snickered it off. And then we actually had a response. And we was like, whoa, wait a minute. Maybe there is something to this. And so they did a second call, and, yeah, we got an echo back or response back. And it was like, well, maybe there's something here. So then we started discussing, doing an investigation, and we kind of we got tied up. We got inundated with so many investigations locally for paranormal activity or spirit activity that we just didn't ever get back up there. And, you know, Mike and I individually came up with ideas and thoughts. Then we kind of got together and talked about it. And we kind of formed a plan of something that we want to test in the near future. And so that's, you know, kind of the video you watched was where we were just, I guess, doing a test run. It was kind of, set up base camp. Let's, you know, we'll go out in the daytime, look a little bit for tracks, you know, see what we see. But then in the evening, we're just going to kind of sit around the camp, listen into the woods, you know, do a couple things, you know, see if we get any kind of responses. And that's really what that was about. And it, you know, we put it in as a Bigfoot research deal, but it was more of us filling out, are we going to be able to do our plan, are we going to be able to implement our plan in, you know, in or around that location and it be effective. And
right.
So that's kind of, well, there's no kind of, that's how I got started into the Sasquatch. And then part of that was once we had our happenings and the things, you know, our activity, And then I started looking into it, and then I found out that there's more. There's activity I didn't know about within, you know, a very short distance to where of our location, which just kind of, you know, heightened everything, our interest of digging into it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love being out there. And for those of you who've never done it, it's such an interesting experience. And once you actually, once you hear what those of us that have heard before identify as a possible Sasquatch, it'll really change you. You really see things in a different light.
Well, I don't want to classify. I personally believe I saw a Bigfoot at a distance.
Yeah.
And I believe I've seen its remnants of where it went through. I cannot definitively say yes, that's what I saw.
Right.
But that one opportunity has just kind of opened the Pandora's box. And of course, I've got Roger that's on our team. And he's an enthusiast, and you know, so he's like, you know, I really want to do this. Let's do this. And I said, well, let's get Facebook going for that, so people maybe will start reporting it to us locally. You know, I mean, I don't mind taking information from other locations, but I'm really interested in the local side of it. And
right,
exactly. You know, we started getting a little bit of feedback locally on it, so it'll be interesting. And of course, you know, I hate to tell you, Brian, but you're going to be an intricate part of that with me throwing stuff off of you and see what sticks and what bounces off.
Oh, I'm all for it, man. I love it. You know, bring it on. I'm all for it. The more I learn, the more I can help, the better I am, man. I love it. I look at everything as a learning experience, and yeah, you got you coming to me, us discussing it, and the possibilities. Yeah, bring it on, man. I love it. It doesn't bother me one bit.
And you know, you brought up a really good point. And you know, after you'd said it, I don't think a lot about it because where I grew up and the things that I do, and I know where I was at, and I didn't know how secure I am where I was at. But you brought up a good point in the video. There is that gunshot, and people don't think about that when they're going out in the woods. Just like I didn't, I didn't think about it because that's our property. It's trespass. There ain't nobody supposed to be on it. And I know that there's only one way in.
Excuse me.
But with that being said, you brought up a very valid point. Don't get yourself killed.
That's right.
Going out to do this.
That's right. See, my thing in my area is, first of all, in the wintertime, you have to be concerned with hunters. Luckily, I live right on a national forest, so there's areas where I know that there's hunters won't be, which, you know, thinking like a Sasquatch, if I was them, that's where I would be. You know, I would know those areas, and that's the areas that I would go to protect myself. In the spring, summertime, the issue there is snakes. So,
yeah.
You know, you really got to kind of balance it when you're going to be out there. And there's so many copperheads and cottonmouths and so forth, especially around my area, that until I get some snake boots, special snake boots, then, yeah, I'm going to be really, really extra cautious when I'm out there doing all that. Particularly in the spring and summer months. I mean, you know, it's like you and I have talked so many times before, Jeff. It's really common sense. You know, people need to use a little bit of common sense when they're trying to do all this.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Because the last thing you want, you don't want to be out there by yourself, first of all. And not in the event that maybe a Sasquatch will attack you or you know, it could be another wild animal, wild hog, bear, you could fall and you can have a mechanical injury. So, you know, you never want to go out into the woods like that alone, because you never know what could happen. You could be stranded out there for days.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, a great example of that is, you know, my team was in shifts. I was there for the three day weekend, and my team was shifting out, and they had went to the swap, and I simply went out to change game cams. I was within 100 yards of base camp. Nothing happened to me, but that's when I experienced something crossing the path, in front, you know, about 100 yards down in front of me. And that, you know, let's say it was a bear, or it could be, I mean, so had I been in a little bit further down, I could have been in a bad spot by myself. And, of course, I would have probably been locatable at, you know, once they realized I was missing. But that's, you know, 3-4 hours down the road. And if you got some kind of trauma, that's life and death.
That's right. That's right. You know, you never know what could happen in any situation. The last thing you want to do is be out there in a situation where you're stranded by yourself. You know, it's funny. This almost slipped my mind, but I talked to someone today who, and Jeff, I really wanted to share it, and I'm glad I remembered it. I wanted to share this with you because it may be a practice that you might be able to attempt. Someone told me today that they know of a situation where a couple of guys were out there, and they were call blasting rabbit distress calls, and that they heard something coming through the woods that sounded just trampling like a rhino, just loud. And it scared them so much that they didn't even stick around to see what it was and left. So, you know, to me, it was interesting in a few aspects. The main one being the rabbit distress call. Have you ever tried anything like that?
No, and I hope you hear the hesitation in my voice. We have a large quantity of bobcats.
Right.
And my concern would be, of course, you know, they move at night. My concern would be if I broadcast it, a critter in distress, it ain't going to be long before we're all in distress.
Well,
them cats are going to come.
Yeah. Well, naturally, you would want to be, I wouldn't just be walking around out in the woods with a boom box broadcasting rabbit distress calls. You know, I would either be in a vehicle or I would be up in a stand of some sort, you know. Definitely want to protect yourself. I think it's unwise to go in the woods, period, without at least some type of firearm on you. Because, you know, it's not the things that you don't know that you have to worry about, but the things that you do know, which would be psycho humans. You know,
right.
When you start hearing, you know, and I told you this the other day, Jeff, you start hearing the Deliverance theme playing, you need to haul ass.
Yeah.
It's time to cut the party short.
Yeah.
But
well,
always,
and I like that. I did. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I like the point on the call. You know, and Mike's kind of communicating with me too, and Mike had brought up the coyote side of it, which we, unfortunately for this part of Western North Carolina, we have started being inundated with this nuisance. But the, you know, speaking of, you know, we're talking about the Linville Mountain Research Center that we have, which is right there. It's our property adjacent to the National Forest. We could very easily set that up with video surveillance, broadcast it from the safety of the dwelling. That way, if a cat did come along, then we're not having to worry about shooting it for showing up or anything like that. We would be in the safety, you know, of the dwelling with having the and being able
right.
to view things remotely on video surveillance. So that, you know, it's definitely something that's worth a try.
Right, right. And, you know, to me, you know, I look at it kind of like if I'm out there, if I'm a Sasquatch and I'm out there in the woods, chances are I'm going to be hungry. You know, and if I hear something like that, I can see where it would bring this thing to just come running. You know, if it truly believed that it was an injured rabbit. Because, first of all, your biggest competition is going to be the coyotes and, like you said, the bobcats. So, you know, if you're out there and you hear a rabbit screaming, you're going to think, I got to get to it before anybody else does.
Right. Yeah, and I think one of the points that Mike was pointing out is that the coyotes aren't going to stop until they find their prey.
Right, right. That's, well, I don't know, because, you know, I've been out there in the woods, and I've gotten a lot of coyote calls very, very, very close to me, always reacting to the Sasquatch calls. So it's really interesting. And I was out there one time with my son, just he and I, and I did a Sasquatch call. And let me tell you something. If we ever get together, I'm going to do a Sasquatch call for you. It's going to, and you're going to be like, holy crap. But you know, I did a Sasquatch call, and instantly just a chorus of coyotes all around us just started going off. I mean, really close. And I don't recall ever hearing of any attacks by coyotes, but I think if any animal's hungry enough, you know, and you're out there in that situation, then, you know, there's more of them than there are you, there's a good chance that they can attack you. So at that point, you know, I looked at my son, and he looked at me, and his eyes were humongous, and I said, I think it's time to go. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, we hit it out, and because you never really know what could take place. So that's, you know, you always want to be prepared.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've heard the coyotes in the distance. You know, with some stuff in that area, they're becoming a little bit more prevalent. But one of our saving graces is the black bear population in that particular area. But you know, it's definitely something we can look at adding to our Bigfoot event. You know, we haven't nailed it down. We haven't nailed down exactly what we're going to do with that, but. That's something we can look at adding into. I mean, because we've got a ton of feedback on, not only from you, but, you know, a couple other folks have said, hey, do these things, which I've shot some past you as well, and some of you are like, nah, I probably wouldn't do that. And other ones, you know, you're like, it won't hurt. So, yeah, every bit of the information we can kind of gather between now and our, I guess, I'm looking at probably May, April, or late April or early May being our kind of D-Day on trying to make our actual attempt of documentation.
And what exactly are you going to be doing? You've got an area that you're trying to monopolize on, right?
Yeah, we're going to try to, you know, looking at, and again, it's just one of those where you just, you look around and you're like, you know, how does, you know, speaking of one of my family members, how in the world does this guy trip? I mean, he would trip and fall right into a bucket of gold. But we're looking at our location, and from the reports that we've had in the surrounding areas, it would appear, and again, you had a very good point, that there's parts of the forest that aren't hunted. And that's true about our portion. There's bear hunters, but our bear hunters don't get out and walk the woods. Some of the guys do off in the gorge, like the Psycho Nut guys. Most of our guys let the dogs do the work for them, and they run the bear with dog. And so we don't have a lot of foot traffic. Even the deer hunters don't tarry too far off, and especially on the side that we're on the ridge line of the Linville Gorge, and then in another ravine, the opposite ravine, very few people go in there at all. And so if a Sasquatch, that's where they'd want to be. That's where they would be at. Like you were saying, that's where the hunters don't go. That's kind of a safe haven. Well, and that makes sense to me now, because looking at the sightings and seeing how they could migrate from where they're at, or move, I shouldn't use the word migrate, but move from where they're at to more food and water sources down the way, would be right past us, would be right where we had the activity at. There's less to zero hunting, great food source, great shelter source, and it leads them to a populated area where they could maybe get an easier source of food. I hate to say dumpsters and things, but that's kind of what it would lead to. It would give them easy access, easy escape, very little potential of detection. So our goal is to set up a base camp. I know this is old news to you, Brian, but we want to set up a camp. Not defend the camp, but we actually want to use the camp as the trap. So we'll back our video surveillance off